And of course, our two special guests tonight, Rosemary Ellen Guiley and John Zaffis, Haunted by the Things You Love. Next hour, we'll take calls with them. Perhaps you have one of these kinds of objects. You never know. And welcome back, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us, John Zaffis as well. John, possessed mirrors. Mirrors have always, to me, seemed to be this portal to the other side. How do they get possessed?
Well, for many years, the theory was that energy would be trapped in between the glass and the filament. And over the course of years, you know, these mirrors would just be passed around from homes to different locations, and the energy would remain with them. They've also been used for a lot of different practices, George, over the years with summoning or, you know, different things whatsoever. So again, you know, crystal band and these things tie in with it, and the energies will stay attached to them. And when they go into certain homes or they intermingle with people, they can definitely wreak a lot of havoc. I must have at least 30 to 40 different mirrors, new, old, that are in the museum today that have really caused some major problems.
People are standing in front of a mirror and they kind of see an image of a ghost or spirit, don't they?
Absolutely. Very common trait where people will see that reflection, because it takes little energy for the spirit to be able to manifest. I mean, even today within Judaism, when somebody passes away in the family, they still cover all the mirrors in the home, fearing that the deceased loved one's energy or soul could be trapped in that mirror in the home.
Rosemary, what do you think of mirrors?
Well, they certainly can act as portals for the spirit world. And in occultism, it's believed that the mirror acts as a warper of space, and that it literally can open up an interdimensional portal that enables spirits to come through. So sometimes people will actually see apparitions and shadow forms emerge out of a mirror or go into a mirror. One of the cases that we have in Haunted by the Things You Love concerns a mirror that was put in a dining room. It was picked up in a yard sale, put in a dining room. It was ornate, kind of an antique piece. And the husband would see dark shadow forms in the house, and they, as soon as he would see them, they would just zip into the dining room, and if he got there fast enough, he could see them going into the mirror. He never saw them coming out. Usually people will see them coming out. Mirrors that are badly placed in haunted locations, like if we go and investigate where, a home where people are having a lot of unpleasant activity, it's not unusual to find a badly placed mirror. You should never have a mirror at the foot of the bed, where you can see yourself in bed in the mirror. Likewise, on the side, it should not be at the head of the bed. Mirrors should never look into each other, because that creates kind of this weird warping funhouse kind of effect. And if mirrors can be replaced and relocated, sometimes that can dampen down activity. But if spirits are using mirrors as a portal, and there's some sort of attachment energy as well, then the mirror does have to be removed completely from the property.
What happens if you break the mirror?
Well, according to bad luck, you've got 7 years
but
of bad luck.
You're not going to have spirits flying out of the thing?
Well, and John can address this too, that people often want to know, what should I do with something? They are often inclined to destroy something that they feel is the source of great disturbance. That's not a good idea, because if you have spirits attached to something and then you break that vessel, you've destroyed their home, they're going to jump to something else, and it could be just another object in your home, maybe even you.
You've got a story on what you called the ritual robe. Tell me about that.
John?
Yeah, here again, George, with certain societies and different types of things that are practiced over the year. This was an old Oddfellows robe. I actually have three today in the museum. And you have to remember, when anything is practiced, there's a tremendous amount of energy that is given off. And it can attach to the clothing, the robes, the different things that are used in these ceremonies. And once some of these things are dispersed and they start to close these places down and people just start picking them up and buying them, as, you know, people collect these things just as unique items to have in the home, a conversational piece. Well, this one, it was white and it had a lot of black different types of things on it. This woman had added it to a collection. She had three other ones, and she thought they were just very cool. She had so much activity, so many different things that were occurring that she just totally decided at that point in time, she said, John, get this one robe out of here. I do not even want it around anymore. She said, the other robes, I'm petrified to even take a look at them. I no longer have any interest in collecting these types of robes.
None at all.
None. She totally stopped after that.
Why is it that it seems that haunted figures in Hollywood movies, John, seem to always have a robe on? Whether it's the Grim Reaper or those little hooded creatures in the movie Ghost, they always have these hoods on.
Yes. Here again, it's used to basically, you know, confine and keep within with the energy. And also, too, a lot of it is just for a focal point. I mean, a lot of our religious people years back, too, always would make sure that they would have hoods on. Again, protection, and it's to basically keep them so they can stay focused.
You talk a lot to Rosemary, of course, about the jinn in some of your past works. Tell me about this small clay oil lamp from the Middle East.
It came with a genie attached to it. And we've had other cases of objects that have come out of the Middle East where they've been used to entrap spirits. And this is a common practice actually around the world and even in Western magic to take an object like a ring, a piece of jewelry, a lamp, a bottle, and entrap a spirit in it that then is released on magical command, almost as a kind of servant. So a woman acquires this antique lamp. It's given to her by relatives who went abroad and did some collecting, and she thinks it's kind of neat and interesting. And after it comes into her house, she starts to get these mental impressions. This is how it often begins with a lot of people, and they don't associate it immediately with an entity or a spirit. They just get odd thoughts that start popping into their heads. And she gets this inclination to rub the lamp, like those old stories about rubbing the genie's lamp to get a wish. And she thinks it's kind of crazy. Well, she's kind of lonely, and there's nobody in her life. And so she gets the weird idea that, well, what the heck? Maybe I should rub the lamp and make some wishes. Maybe I could get some hunky guy. And so she activates this lamp then, and the spirit that's attached to it. And It starts like acting out her wishes, and if she thinks a bad thought about someone, like, oh, I wish somebody would not do that anymore, then suddenly something happens where it seems like her wish is put into immediate effect. Well, she started also having bad phenomena in the house, very common. This is one of the most uniform kinds of phenomena that we see, or the poltergeist stuff, bad smells, nightmares, black shadows in the house, and things do escalate. People try to ignore stuff in the beginning. It's just my imagination. It'll go away. It doesn't. It gets worse. And that's when they find people like John and me.
Well, and it's good to find people like you and John, that's for sure. John, as you have investigated all these, in your career, what can you say about this phenomenon of these haunted objects?
That they date back thousands of years, George. I mean, one of our most classic haunted item is the Hope Diamond. And the story that ties in with that, that, you know, anybody that has come in contact with this has, you know, become very ill, or they end up passing away, they lose everything. And finally, its last owner that purchased it did it deliberately just to put it into a museum so that it wasn't really going to wreak havoc on anybody else's lives. So again, when we look at this as a collective, as I do, and study this, and many years ago just reading about so many of the haunted items, you know, Egyptian and Greece and, you know, all these places where they had ritual items or, you know, different things that they would create and worship. These things would literally become haunted because of the energy that would be focused towards them. So it's something that's intriguing. It's coming more to light with people talking about them and sharing some of the information. And people, you know, take that step back and go, gee, yeah, haunted land, houses, why not haunted objects? So again, it's something that's always been there. But, you know, fortunately, it's coming a little bit more to light now with people like Rosemary, myself, and other individuals speaking about them.
What do you recommend people do, John, if they want to go to, let's say, estate sales and buy things from somebody who just passed on?
I necessarily do not feel that most items, George, have any issue whatsoever. We come in contact with those ones that do. But the key thing is I always tell somebody, you know, if it's a creepy-looking item or you're getting creepy feelings from it, please just don't buy it.
Well, I was going to ask you that. You must get that feeling when you're looking at it. It's got that strange look to it, doesn't it?
Most people, they tell me this, and again, they'll go, gee, you know, John, I was holding it, or I looked at it, and I really had to have it, and, you know, I went against my gut instinct and turned around and bought it anyways. So again, you know, that's the key factor. Doesn't feel right, or you're getting that creepy vibe near it, don't even buy it.
How about the angelic cherub, John?
An interesting story. Young lady and this guy went out for a very long time. Beautiful girl. They ended up breaking up. She moved on with her life. She got married and married a gentleman that had businesses. She had housekeepers, brand new cars. Everything was going great in her life. The gentleman was still, you know, madly in love with her. He wasn't even dating, didn't even move on with her life. Well, she was aware of it, and, you know, he called her, and it was her birthday. And she asked her to go out for lunch, and she agreed. Well, he presented this sketch with to her as a birthday gift. Well, she brought it home, and she just put it down in the basement and really didn't think too much of it. But crazy things started happening. She started obsessing over the old boyfriend. She started wearing jewelry and things that he gave, started unpacking things that he gave her. She was fighting with her husband, and all this crazy chaos was going on. And she called me up. She's a personal friend of mine. She goes, John, I don't believe in all this nonsense you get involved with and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, she's telling me the whole story. And she goes, John, it all started when he gave me that stupid sketch. And I went, what sketch? So immediately I go up to her home. She brings it up, and I took a look at it. And I said, uh-oh. I could see where part of it, you know, things that were the dark, dark red was probably human blood. Come to find out, it was. I opened up the back of it and realized that he was casting a spell towards her to try to win her back. Once the item was removed from her home, everything had calmed down. So again, situations where deliberate things were done, where human blood was used in the sketch, and he did a love ritual to try to win her back on the back of it.
Not a wise thing to do.
No. No, because these things do occur, they do happen, because people do things, you know, just randomly, and they don't realize, you know, saying something or doing something can give it that amount of recognition to actually trigger something, George, to occur and happen with people.
Rosemary, have you ever had an object that you thought was haunted?
Yes, I have. Apart from cases I've investigated, I once was given a statue of a Greek deity by a woman who practiced witchcraft, and I didn't think anything of it at the time. It turned out that she was not a big fan of some of my writing, and the object had been cursed. And things started happening in my house, starting out with small things like, misplacement of objects. I couldn't find things. Things would break. It just seemed like a lot of things started going wrong, and things weren't working out for me, missed opportunities, daily things started going askew in my life, and to the point where I had to question what was going on. And backtracking, I could pinpoint the onset of it to bringing this object into the house. So it was made out of resin, so I didn't want to, try incinerating it or anything. I did a cleansing on it, and I threw it into deep water. And that's one of the remedies for it, to throw it into deep water, bury it. First, the object has to be treated so that a spirit is either sent away to out into the ethers to be dealt with by other beings, or it is contained with the item. And after I did that, then everything started to clear up. But it was like I had mini poltergeists running around in my house.
Let's talk about the Jester doll, Rosemary. What do we know about this?
This was a case of a jilted, spurned lover. And we called it the Jester Had the Last Laugh because everybody sort of lost at the end. This was a case where a woman was married, and she had a very happy home life. All the parties involved were Hispanic, and the two women involved were interested in Santeria and in spellcasting, and one of them was quite good at it. Well, her co-worker fell in love with her husband and wanted him for herself, and they actually started an affair. The wife did not know about it. Well, one Christmas, she gets a gift from this co-worker, which is kind of uncustomary. They weren't in the habit of exchanging gifts. And it was this Jester doll, which she thought was kind of odd. But the Jester doll had a curse on it, and the curse was to break up the marriage. And not only break up the marriage, but absolutely destroy everything in this other woman's life, kind of obliterate the opposition. So she and her husband start fighting. They become alienated. The kids feel there's a horrible atmosphere in the house, you know, the usual syndrome of things. And then the wife discovers the affair. So she confronts her husband, and it all comes out then that her coworker has, had this obsession for a long time. And she confronts the coworker. And the woman tells her that the doll had a curse on it, and there was absolutely nothing she could do about it. It was too late. She was going to win, and she was going to win everything. And that's when John gets called in. So the woman didn't want to get rid of the doll. She was afraid to get rid of the doll because she didn't want to do anything to make things worse. So she kind of stuffed it away. And here again, we had another case where multiple treatments had to be undertaken to clear the energy in the house and clear the attachment from both the husband and the wife. Exorcisms. We're talking exorcisms here as well as environmental cleansing and removing the doll and treating the doll. The husband and wife actually reconciled but it was just like everybody kind of lost something in the process. So lives can be seriously damaged by this. And they wound up just being very unhappy in the end. And
did they get divorced?
They did at some point. The whole relationship was kind
just
of ruined.
Collapsed.
Even after the reconciliation, it was ruined. And, you know, Humpty Dumpty falls off the wall, and that's it. So the Jester sort of had the last laugh because things did get obliterated on all fronts.
And the other woman, I guess.
Yes, and she quit her job. She just one day just didn't show up anymore. Nobody knows what happened to her, whether she left town or not. She couldn't stand being in the same, the same situation with her love rival. And so she lost out, too.
We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to continue with the special stories from Rosemary Ellen Guiley and John Zaffis with their work, Haunted by the Things You Love. Welcome back, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us, John Zaffis. Rosemary, I had a great time with you on that Beyond Belief show we did.
It was wonderful. I especially loved the Ouija board segment we did.
You actually brought that thing on a plane, didn't you?
I did, yes, and miraculously we got there in one piece.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. And, John, you're having a great time with your sci-fi show.
Fantastic, George. We did 30 episodes and, you know, covered a lot of different things. People got to hear about, you know, different items in different homes and different locations out there, and people have really enjoyed it.
Was there anything surprising for you, John, during the taping of the shows?
Oh, gosh, yes. There's so many different things that end up happening that just don't make it into the episodes, George, where, you know, somebody will experience something or somebody on the production crew will experience something, and it just doesn't make it into the episode. And I would just sit back and start laughing and going, gee, the audience would get a big kick out of just watching that. So there's so many things that occur and happen when you're doing these different types of shoots that you just wish would make it in there, but there's just never not enough time.
No, there never is. Tell me about the Spirit in the Mask story. What was that one?
Go ahead, Ro.
This was another collectible item that was actually acquired in England, but it was from Africa. And it involved a woman who had a lot of money. She liked exotic things. She went over to England. She was actually browsing around in the antique stores for other things. But she saw this mask, and it riveted her attention. And this is another case of, like, wow, there's just something really weird about it. I'm kind of unsettled, but I got to have it. So she brought it over. She did have some other masks in her house. And she puts it up on the wall. Now, this is a really weird-looking mask because it's got kind of like long locks of hair and these big round holes for eyes that if you look at it, it just looks like you're staring into black holes. The usual syndrome of things start happening, nightmares, apparitions, shadowy figures, bad feelings, and she pinpoints it to this mask, and John gets called, and she was so freaked out. At first, she could not believe that anything supernatural was happening, and we often find cases where people think that there's something medically wrong with them, so they'll go off and see a doctor, have a bunch of tests done. This is what she did. Nothing wrong with her. She was advised that she was just under stress. You know, take some time off, have a tranquilizer, and nothing helps. So when they've exhausted every possible natural explanation they can find, which is something we have to do in investigations anyway, look for natural reasons first, you know, then she was forced to contemplate supernatural, which kind of went against her grain, and it all had to do with this mask. Well, here was another case of research, because we could do some research on this mask. We could identify the part of Africa that it came from. And the thing about masks is that when they have been made in tribal societies, these are sacred objects, and they are often made deliberately to house spirits. They're for ritual purposes, and the spirits are invited to participate in these rituals. It's a very sacred thing, and the mask is the house of the spirit. And in many rituals, when people put on the mask, they then are in a state of kind of temporary possession, where they are in deep communion with the spirit and allow the spirit to act out through them. When the mask is not being worn, then the spirit resides in the house of the mask. So when these objects get turned into tourist attractions, if there's a spirit that's still in the mask, it rides along with the object, and they find the spirit then is often not happy to be taken out of its native
no,
surroundings.
Not at all. Then there's the other one called Pig Face. Who wants that one?
Okay. Again, in situations, George, these are two little statues or bookends. And a person had them in their home. They had moved on with their lives. This gentleman got married and everything was going great. They purchased a home and they were setting it up. And he took these two bookends and he had them in their living room. Now, there was all kinds of things going on, and they just started arguing, and they started fighting. Well, I got involved, you know, with the investigation, and naturally, talking to him, I had found out that his girlfriend prior was a practitioner into witchcraft. And she was madly in love with him again, and she was hoping that they would always remain together and everything. Well, as we were talking and going through the interview and, you know, going back several different times and everything, I said, gee, did you keep anything? Did you, you know, is there anything in here? And where they were having the shadow forms and they were doing the most arguing was in the living room area. And that's when, you know, he all of a sudden piped right up and he goes, well, those two bookends from her. Well, he neglected to tell his new wife that those had belonged to his old girlfriend and she had given them to him. And, you know, when I picked them up and I looked at them, I seen a couple of markings that were under there, and I asked him if he was familiar with them or not, and he really wasn't. And I said, well, these are markings, and these were definitely used with an intent and purpose for ritual. I said, so that's probably why she gave them to you. And, again, you know, without even thinking of it very innocently, because he liked them, he just had taken them out and was using them as bookends. Needless to say, that night, his wife insisted that those two bookends were going home with me.
Just amazing. Rosemary, you know, when we were talking about the curses and how they affect people, the Jester doll, can't people be strong enough to fight the curse?
Sometimes they are. I think that curses are thrown all the time that have little to no effect. They've either not been done very well or they've just bounced off the person because the person has a very strong energy field around them and it is resistant to it. Some people have a lot of sensitivity to spirit-oriented things, and these are indefinable characteristics in their energy field. Sometimes they're emotionally vulnerable. They might be more suggestible. They may not even be aware of their own vulnerabilities. So the ability for a curse to take effect does vary quite a bit.
Next up, we've got the violin that simply doesn't play music.
Here again, a person enjoyed this, George. It was a beautiful violin. They had picked it up from an estate sale and brought it in. You know, it was in a glass case, a beautiful, beautiful piece. And there seemed to be a lot of craziness that was taking place around it. The person was getting headaches. They weren't feeling comfortable around it. They had all kinds of activity occurring. And it dawned on the person. They were like, there's got to be something strange with this. They were hearing music, you know, as it was being played and different things. And the person literally got very upset, very angry, and just started yelling at the item. It literally just flew right off the wall. Now, it was quite heavy. It wasn't that light. And it ended up down on the floor, but the surprising thing with it, the glass didn't break, the casing didn't break, but the violin inside broke into pieces.
Inside?
Inside, and the case did not break. I found that very odd because it was regular glass and very thin wood. So I was amazed by that. And again, the person just got completely, completely spooked over the whole thing. And called me, and I went over immediately, and we were talking about it and everything. And I asked, do you know much about the history of it? And they really didn't know too much about it. But when the person said to me, you know, when I started yelling at it and I confronted it, it just literally flew right off the wall. Here again, with those types of situations, these poor people get so scared and so spooked by it, that they just don't even want it around anymore.
No.
They really don't want to know anything. They don't want to hear about it. They just want it out of their lives.
Sounds like it had some sadness attached to it, too, doesn't it?
Again, when we deal with musical instruments and everything, you really think about it, the amount of emotion that goes into that. I mean, people are, you know, usually very gifted. We know of many different pianos out there today that are extremely haunted. I've often heard about this one person that bought one of Liberace's pianos, and they have all kinds of crazy activity around it.
I've got my father's World War II helmet, John and Rosemary, and though it's, you know, definitely it's not haunted, but you can feel when you look at it, when you touch it, you can feel almost as if you're there back in 1944 for him. It's a weird, weird feeling. So I can see how sometimes these objects, like magnets, can also attract things, can't they?
Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind, George, because it's the collective and emotion, you know, from things that belong to people, especially relatives. You know, same thing with me, George. You know, sometimes I'll hold some of my mom's things or my dad's things, and you can feel it and you can connect to it. So there again, you know, once those vibrations and that collective energy pulls together, is there something that remains from them with these items? I don't have any doubt whatsoever.
And, of course, we have the scornful military jacket. Tell us about that one.
Well, a young lady was at an estate sale, and she saw this old cadet jacket. It was pretty cool. It had long tails on it and these big gold buttons, and she thought it'd be really cool to wear that. You know, some of them pulled together these crazy outfits. Well, she had purchased it. She brought it home. She started having black shadow forms in her room. She was picking up on hearing gentlemen talking and guys talking and everything, and she wasn't able to sleep. She was getting really cranky and everything, and, you know, she started telling her mom about it, and things were escalating. So the mom said, gee, you know, this all started when you picked up, it's a West Point cadet jacket. Now, what's interesting and intriguing about these, George, is that they've never changed the way they've made them over the years. It's still the same pattern going back all the way to the 1800s. So the mother removed it. She put it out in the garage. She put it in a bag, and all the activity calmed down. Well, the young lady went, all right, I don't think it's the jacket. And she went out. She brought it back into the house and everything. And within 24 hours, all hell broke loose in that house, and things kicked right up. And the mother figured it out. She goes, you brought that right back into the house, didn't you? And she said, yeah, I did. And she goes, that's it. I know this guy named John. I'm giving him a call. He's coming over and taking that jacket out of here.
Have you ever been hurt, John, picking up an object?
I've had a couple of situations, George, with ritual items that were used in very, very dark black art things where I've picked them up and I'm trying to get the bindings squared away and different things, and I've literally had burn marks appear. So again, you know, some of this energy associated with some of these items can be very, very strong, and they can affect you also. So again, when that has happened, but I was preparing myself and I was like, okay, something's probably going to end up happening with this. But again, I had ended up with, you know, my hands getting very light burn marks from touching them.
Jewelry cursed by a jilted witch, Rosemary.
Another case of spurned love. And it's amazing how often this happens. In this case, it was a woman who was spurned, and she cursed the jewelry that her fiancé still owned. She had given him some gifts. Now, she was a witch, and they got engaged, and she hadn't revealed too much about herself until deeper into the relationship, and the man was just uncomfortable with this. And in fact, as she revealed more of herself and some of the rituals and things she was involved in, he began to get very uncomfortable in the relationship. So he cut it off. and she was, of course, deeply distressed. So he got involved with another woman, and they wound up getting married. And unbeknownst to them, jewelry that had been that the jilted woman had given to the man had been cursed. He told her to keep the engagement ring. He didn't want any of the jewelry that she had given him.
He held it. Yeah.
He wanted out. She held the jewelry, and I think that's when she cursed it and said, "No, you know, this is really meant for you. You should keep it." Well, on their wedding night, what happened to this poor man was he could not function on his wedding night. And, in fact, they could not consummate their marriage for quite some time. And he married a younger woman, and their parents, her parents paid for, you know, a huge wedding, all the trimmings, daddy's little girl. Daddy's little girl is suddenly not happy. And so the in-laws get unhappy. And this curse interfered with their sexual relationship and nearly blew them apart very early in the marriage. So here's another case of a relationship that nearly gets ruined. They were able to recover. It's a form of what you could call the Asmodeus curse, because this is very old story from biblical times about the demon Asmodeus, who falls in love with a woman, and on her wedding night he kills her husband. And she goes through, you know, six husbands before she marries a guy who knows how to send the demon away. That was a very deadly kind of curse.
Yeah, I definitely would want you and John around if any of this happened, that's for sure. My gosh. You know, since you've been doing this, Rosemary, you've been doing this a long time. Have you ever had an issue with the other side?
Yes, I have. Not with the other side in terms of dead people so much, but when I started getting involved about 10 years ago in negative hauntings and shadow people and jinn cases, I started getting more activity. Fortunately, I don't get a whole lot in my house, and I have not been afflicted to the point of a lot of the victims that I have worked with in cases. But the negative activity did step up, and I've gone through times when it's been very annoying. Oftentimes, it will affect people around me. If they can't get you, they will get people around you if they are vulnerable. And that's a very weighty responsibility to carry around, because I don't want to see anybody hurt. So there have been times when I have literally had to step away from things for a while just to let things cool off. A lot of these entities, they don't want you looking into what they're doing. They don't want you to get rid of them. Some of them are very powerful, and they will fight back.
And fight back in a big way indeed. Haunted by the Things You Love, Rosemary, the book is available now, is it not?
It is on Amazon in hard print. It's available as an ebook on Amazon, Nook, Kobo, and iTunes, and we'll have it up on our website.
Two separate websites for Rosemary and John. We've got them linked for you at coasttocoastam.com, visionaryliving.com is Rosemary's. John Zaffis, Zaffis, belongs to John. When we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to take your phone calls, questions, and of course stories. Have you ever picked up some kind of an object that might have been possessed? Let us know what it's like. I'm George Norrie, back on Coast to Coast AM.